11 below, and Jason Cairns joins us for First Thoughts. We're going to get to 12 above today, my friend.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
It's a heat wave.
It's been hard to get above zero, but to get to double digits, and wow, I mean, it's, I may wear shorts.
There you go. Yeah, Heather's brother lives in Houston, and it was down to 18, I think, yesterday.
Yeah.
And their power's out. So
I know.
They're kind of, I can't imagine.
No, I know. That's gotten national attention in terms of the cold, and then to have the power out for sure.
Right. Yep.
Huh. Well, Lent starts tomorrow.
It does.
And so we're thinking about what do we do here for the for First Thoughts, and you have a thought for us.
Yeah, so I try to find a devotional or a series of thoughts that I can read through during Lent. You know, I haven't traditionally given something up for Lent, but I do want to center my heart as we're coming up to Holy Week and crucifixion, resurrection. And this year, as I was searching on Amazon, I found a book that resonated deeply with me because of all of the talk that I've been doing on wholeness. And the title of the book is A Path to Wholeness, A Lenten Companion by a guy named Russell Levinson, who is an ordained Episcopal priest in Texas currently.
Huh.
And so, you know, I've read a lot on the topic of wholeness. It's something I think about a whole lot. And even just reading his preface this morning, it stirred me. And he had cited a person named Lord George Carey, who wrote, "We are living in a fragmented society whose most serious dislocation is between the human and the divine." And then he goes on to say, "The ache of the human heart has always been to be made whole."
Mm-hmm.
And so his intent here in the devotional is to walk through the idea of wholeness. How do we connect with Christ? How do we understand that Christ is the thing that fills that hole within us? You know, that he is the one that makes us whole.
Yeah. So that's what the Lenten Companion is going to be about.
Yeah, so that's what we're going to be taking a look at, you know, just really taking an inward look, I think, through this. And
so how long are these readings? I mean, they're going to fit in here, our little five-minute visit?
I hope so. Mm-hmm. So the first one is, it's a fairly small book. It looks like it's, I don't know, five paragraphs or so. And
yeah,
if it gets to be too much, I can certainly offer just kind of a snapshot of what
sure.
I'm reading each morning. So,
sure, that sounds good. I was watching Designated Survivor, kind of relaxing a little bit last night. I'm into season two, I don't know, episode 9 or 10. And, boys, things happen on that show, I'll tell you what.
But a lot.
I think I told my wife, I think, am I blending fact and fiction where I'm like, I'm thinking about strongly getting involved in the Tom Kirkman for President 2024 campaign. So,
I think a couple of years ago when I started watching that show, I had posted Tom Kirkman for President.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I agree.
And the reason I mentioned that, because last night something happened, and there was a reference made to about becoming whole. And, you know, it's just, yeah, and it's just like, there it is. You know, I mean, just the idea of, I mean, just a recognition that whole and holiness. And I love, I mean, it's maybe not original with you, I don't know, but this idea that the importance of integration, and if we see sin as something that disintegrates, that is just, that's really helpful to me.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that we need to work to wrap our minds around that idea that we're fragmenting ourselves in sin, relationally, individually. I have big thoughts on how wide that goes, and I suspect we'll get to that at some point in the next 15 years. But
yeah, right. So making ourselves whole and holy, and so A Path to Wholeness, A Lenten Companion, and it's by who again?
His name is Russell Levinson.
Uh-huh.
So again, he must have wrote it last year. It's a 2020 publication. I don't know anything
Very
else
good.
About him. So.
Very good. Well, it sounds good, and we look forward to the journey, and we'll take it together.
Okay.
All right. Thank you,
sounds
friend.
Good.
Talk to you tomorrow. Jason Cairns, WWIB. Well, we have talked about, I don't know, what do you call it? Gorilla Glue Girl. That's how she's known. Tessica Brown and Caleb, she now has a full-time agent. The Louisiana woman who went viral after getting Gorilla Glue globbed in her hair has taken a big step toward making her 15 minutes of fame last as long as a scalp full of adhesive. And she's hired a full-blown celebrity management team, including an agent.
I hear she has merch. Now, this was kind of a nice story. I saw this yesterday. So she donated $20,000 from a GoFundMe that was set up for her to charity. It raised almost $24,000 on GoFundMe after her story went global. And now that her super glue ordeal is over, Tessica is donating most of the cash raised to a charity started by the surgeon, Dr. Michael Obang, who treated her for free. So she's paying it forward. She did plan to keep about $1,000 to cover bills from an unsuccessful emergency room visit. I think we all heard about that. But I really want to know what Gorilla Glue Girl has for merchandise. In fact, I might use the Google real quick.
I can tell you. No, she's got a line that includes $28 t-shirts, $50 sweatshirts, and $45 sweatpants.
No wonder she's giving the GoFundMe money back.
Wow.
Here's the thing. This is America.
It is.
And even if you do something rather foolish, if you can capitalize on it.
Isn't America a great country?
I love it here.
Just a reminder, it is primary election day. 7 candidates on the ballot in this contest today. We told you some about this over the last week or so. It's interesting, Caleb, because Deborah Kerr has distinguished herself. She is the former Brown Deer school superintendent and a founding member of Closing the Gap Consortium. And I'll say the other candidates' names. But basically, she has supported like school vouchers and such. But then she's come out in the last couple of days and said, well, I'm a Democrat and I voted for Biden. So do with that what you will. The other 6 also have various aspects of Democratic support, but you got 7 candidates in a nonpartisan race. The top 2 advanced to the April 6th election. So
a lot to be decided today.
Yes, I should say this. Troy Gunderson went to school in Colfax, K through 12, and he's a former 12-year school superintendent at Gay Electric Trumbull and another district for 10 years, West Salem also. And then the others, Steve Krull, a former principal in Milwaukee, Jill Underly, current superintendent of the Pecatonica District. We heard from her yesterday. Again, we've heard from all of these. Shandalyn Hendricks Williams served as Governor Evers' director of his Milwaukee office. Sheila Briggs, assistant state superintendent and former Madison principal at an elementary school. And Jill Fenrick, we're hearing from today, science teacher and a college lecturer on geology.
You know, in a world so affected by a pandemic, it was a struggle for a lot of folks. And some survived, some thrived. Like this farmer from Britain who realized, you know what? With our culture becoming so influenced by Zoom, I think we need a little barnyard fun added into some of those Zoom meetings. And so this is what she did. Dot McCarthy from Rossendale, Lancashire, England, found an innovative way to not only have extra income during the pandemic, but also a way to use her goats to spread joy and laughter. Cronkshaw Fold Farm, doesn't that sound British? The property McCarthy inherited from her mother not only was a sanctuary for the farm animal who provided resources, but was also home to several other activities like farm tours, sheepdog demos, goat yoga, weddings, etc. After COVID-19 hit, she lost most of her sources of income, so what started as a joke to put her goats on video for a few laughs during Zoom meetings turned to a full-time business for her after she received about 200 emails saying, hey, could we have your goats join our Zoom meeting as well?
Wow.
Now, she charges $7 an appearance for her goats to make appearances on your Zoom meeting, and her business brought in about $70,000 last year.
Wow.
That's a goat saying wow.
I guess. So she would just kind of know the link, and then she would just have the goat appear.
Yeah, because they would just, you know, they would, again, you can just send a private
creative
or public link, and she can just pick out whatever goat wants to be on the meeting that day and just have them. And you've seen this before, and it was one of those heartwarming things from 2020 is how sometimes there might be a celebrity or the cast of Hamilton or something would jump on board on someone's Zoom call, and there were those great moments. Well, what if a goat? You say, hey, we can't afford to have John Krasinski from The Office come on to our Zoom call, but you know, how about a goat?
$7.
Sure. A little levity in the office, even when we're apart. I like it.
That's the entrepreneurial spirit to the tune of $70,000.
Dot McCarthy. I love it.
Way to go. Good job. All right. So what question should you ask someone before marriage?
This comes from a Facebook post, so you know it's reliable. You should probably ask, again, your potential spouse, their thoughts on kids, about finances, political ideology, et cetera, et cetera. For instance, how much debt do you have? Probably a good thing to know. And also, Dave Ramsey would love this. Are you getting further into debt or making ways to get out of it? Are you taking baby steps, baby?
Yeah.
And I'm going to go back to just that idea about political religious ideology, because I'm going to leave the political alone. Because, I mean, we've got, you know, Mary Madeline and James Carville, and she from the right, he from the left, and they made it work. But the spiritual thing, my, you know, certain, you know, like parents or grandparents, there's something that, like, their emphasis. My dad's was like, go to college, because he didn't, and he really wanted me to.
Sure.
My grandma's was, marry a believer. So,
very,
you know,
vital.
There's just great messages, which is very biblical.
And I think it's tough, and some people might get indignant about saying this, but if you go into a relationship saying, well, I can get them to change,
sure.
You can't. God yeah. can, but you can't. And be very, very careful and yeah. cautious about that thinking that, well, he doesn't know the Lord or she doesn't know the Lord, but, you know, and I really like him.
And I mean, there are stories that come to mind, but still, I think the safer, better bet. Appreciated that advice from Grandma. So how does your credit look?
Okay. Again, questions to ask someone before marriage. Joint checking account, how do we divide the bills, etc. Be careful about that whole his and hers. Yeah. Yeah, that can be dangerous.
Do you have any expensive hobbies?
Yeah. how do you feel about having pets? Mm-hmm. Again, you know, one of those things. I'm happily married, but I didn't realize until early in my marriage that my wife would send me photos of cute rescue dogs
yeah.
until we got one.
You know, I've gotten the respect, the props, as we had kind of a mini farm in terms of so many animals. We were chickens and the whole deal. And people would come from America going, Halvo, wow, you really, and I mean, with the two dogs, the two ferrets, I mean, I'm not the top of the list of the animal lover, but hey, walking the dogs yesterday in the cold, earning some family love for sure. So, hey.
Sierra weighs in on the WIB listener line at 396-1670 and says, hey, another question to ask is, you aren't already married, are you?
That would be good. Yeah,
probably good to make
okay.
sure.
Very good. I think we've covered, what else do we got here left? Their opinions on children and how to divide the child-rearing responsibilities, their relationship with each other's extended families.
I like this last one as well. What's your love language?
Uh-huh.
And finding that out as well, too, because, again, I'd say my wife's is acts of service, which is something that I need to speak uh-huh. that much more fluently,
oh, yeah.
her love language.
I
really
hear you.
Do.
That's my wife's love language, too. What is yours, though?
I would say there's probably a cross, but I would say words of affirmation is probably... probably mine.
That is mine as well. We
share
that.
Go. Peas in a pod.
There you go. All right. Well, a couple of food items here this morning. It is National Almond Day, and you reacted very positively to that.
I love almonds. And again, trying to eat healthier. We've been using up a lot of almonds, buy them in bulk at Sam's Club. So, yeah, the regular almonds. And then I have been known to enjoy a good smoked almond as well, or sea salt. Almonds are also delicious.
Your wife makes an almond butter to die for.
Yeah, so as we were going through that whole 30, she made a lot of almond butter, and it was fantastic on apples, bananas, etc. So, yeah, the regular straight-up almonds, probably what we enjoy the most, especially in almond butter.
I like the comment from your brother, Josh, regarding he was on the same whole 30. What did he say about the almond butter?
He said that it was the best thing that he had tasted all month long. And, again, the poor guy's a bachelor and a viral guy. Check out his latest. Creation, but yeah, he was like, yeah, I'm making everything for myself, and he said, yeah, the fact that Lindsay sent me some of that almond butter, it was the best thing I had all month. So,
well, you know what they say, it's a very heart healthy month. Researchers have found that they significantly increase the amount of antioxidants in the bloodstream, reduce blood pressure, and improve blood flow. I think I'm going to get me some more almonds.
Yes, I eat them by the handful.
Often recommend almonds as a snack because they reduce cholesterol levels. So
there you go.
Yeah. Also, on the subject of thinking of cheap candy, and some in my house were invading a large retail outlet to try to find some of those, you know, the heart-shaped candy boxes. The
you always want
reduced.
The deals.
Yeah, exactly. And then they came home with some, like, Sour Patch candy. I'm like, no, I don't need that. But this is new, Nestle, to launch something new, which maybe you can explain to me, Caleb. They're going to launch a vegan Kit Kat.
How does that work?
Vegans can soon get their chocolate fix with the launch of Nestle's plant-based Kit Kat. The vegan confection is set to hit the market later this year at selected retailers. The candy will still feature its crispy wafer covered in chocolate. Nestle's head of confectionery says a plant-based Kit Kat is the most requested item on their social media accounts.
Really?
So what's usually...
I mean, I know there's plant-based meats and all sorts of things, but now plant-based candy?
I can understand it in that regard, but what's in a candy, in a typical Kit Kat that would upset the vegan conscience?
I don't know enough to answer that intelligently.
All right, if you can
I know
help
the
us
jingle.
Out, if you can
if
help
that
us out,
helps, give me a break.
On the listener line, 715-396-1670. Three nights. Sure, give it to us, the jingle.
No, I don't want to sing any more than I already will tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning. Are you
going to
tease us? What is the pet peeve you're putting to music today?
I'm trying to remember who it is for, but it is about those who leave their shopping carts askew in parking lots.
All right. So that's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow at 7:45.
Yeah, right around one of the regular features here on the Wib Wake Up Show.